Welcome to Idle Red Hands, a podcast from Japan about gaming and gamer life. And welcome to Idle Red Hands. I'm Chris.
I'm Wayne.
I'm Lyle.
And we have another review.
Yeah, we played Eminent Domain, the card game.
Oh, yeah, deck-building game, yeah.
The deck-building card game.
Yeah, you said it was, the best of the ones that we played, Chris?
Yeah, I think of all the deck-building games, including Dominion, Thunderstone, Magic, even for that matter. I think this is probably the most fun I've had with them. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, no, I really enjoy it, too. I think it, yeah, just like you said, Chris, is probably one of the better ones, just because it's more interactive. It doesn't suffer as much from the, like, four games of solitaire feeling that Dominion kind of had.
Yeah.
Or even kind of Thunderstone has that a little bit.
Yeah, I wouldn't go straight up to call it interactive, but as deck-building games go, yeah.
No, it kind of reminds me of Ad Astra with cards a little bit, and the fact that you get to do something on other people's turns based on the things that they choose to do.
Yeah.
Yeah, I liked it too. So for people that haven't played it or even heard of it, it's a science fiction colonizing game.
Yeah, it's kind of like an empire-building game, because your little player is called your empire, even though it doesn't feel very empire-y.
One hand of cards is not very imperial, huh?
Yeah.
And your hand consists of cards that are different actions.
Yeah.
And as maybe different from some games, if people are familiar with Magic, you're drawing from one deck and putting it into your hand. Here you can choose, and you know exactly what's in each deck, and you're choosing from either like the colonize deck or the research deck or the survey deck.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really like how you kind of, on your turn, when you choose a role to play, I really like how you take a card from the communal sort of card area, and then you follow the instructions, and then that card goes into your hand, rather than like other games where you buy something or you get a card, you kind of don't get to use it right away. Here it's like you get to use it right away. And then it also goes into your deck, so I kind of like the strategy of, yeah, I need to do this now, so I'll take this role, but later on in the game, is that going to kind of screw me up because now it's in my deck and it's just kind of clogging up my hand?
Yeah, looking at it, there was a lot of different ways to go at gaining points and ways to go at like colonizing and gaining planets, so it has some good complexity built in, but it's also really easy to pick up, and I think one of the things that goes into it is that I think it was the easiest to learn as well, of all of the Dominion and Thunderstone, etc. So
it might also be because like most of the instructions of what you do are completely right on the card.
And in this case, they were in English, too, which really helped.
Yeah. I'm just thinking, like, some other games, like Thunderstone, like, they had, like, icons and kind of, like, special abilities, but those were printed other places, and you kind of had to remember them.
Yeah.
And eventually, you just kind of remember what the symbols do, but, like, here in Eminent Domain, like, everything is pretty much right on that card.
Hmm.
Probably be a game that you could get kind of non-gamers to play, possibly.
I guess.
I mean, if you held a gun to their head, you can make a non-gamer play anything.
Yeah, I suppose.
And that's our tactic for getting new gamers.
Based on our anecdotal evidence of last week, where we played Pandemic in front of non-gamers, not that there was a crowd watching us,
but
passers-by, and Eminent Domain, people, I thought, were more dismissive of the card game. They're like, oh, is that like Magic? And then kind of would start to take that step or two back.
Yeah. You're so like, no, it's not Magic, all right.
Whereas with Pandemic, although it is a board game, not a card game, they would go, oh, what's that like? And then you go, oh, have you seen the movie Contagion or Outbreak? And they'd be like, oh, that sounds cool.
Hmm.
And they would actually want to play it. And because it, Pandemic is, I guess we're now getting into a review of Pandemic. it's just a map of the world with, you know, a couple of pieces and wooden blocks that were very easy to, I don't know, understand.
Because
they go, oh, yeah, these are all different diseases. And they're really like, oh, yeah, I get that.
Disease? What hell kind of game are you playing?
Yeah, I think the only like specific questions we get, do they have specific names or is it just blue disease?
Like, blue disease.
It's blue disease. But you can make it whatever you want. It could be
Streptococcus bluis.
Yeah. I think since the board for Pandemic looks very much like a Risk board, so I think almost everyone is kind of at least familiar with Risk, so they'll at least kind of, you know, be interested in looking at it, whereas, yeah, Eminent Domain, it's just kind of cards and there's no real board, so they're kind of like, nah, what's going on there? Magic, yeah, as Lyle said, oh, it's Magic, so I'll just kind of quietly slink away.
Hmm.
Yeah. Well, back to Eminent Domain, though.
Yeah.
For the most part, you can do two things on your turn. Hmm. One is called an action, and one is called a role. The interactive part is that when you do your role, the other players in the game can also follow that role.
Right.
You would be the leader in, let's say, surveying planets and drawing planet cards. but other people could follow it at a slight disadvantage.
Yeah, usually the leader gets some kind of bonus above and beyond following. Like you get to draw an extra planet card, or you get an extra fighter when you play the warfare card. It's kind of that interaction that I think makes it a little bit better than the other games, as we said in the beginning. Because even if you don't follow the other person's role, you can dissent, and then you get to draw a card from your deck. So you are essentially doing something on everybody's turn. That kind of makes it feel more interactive. Well, it's not unique to only Eminent Domain, but it does have a very clear end, and it's not just when one person crushes the other. It's like when X number of these stacks of cards gets depleted, the game's over.
Hmm.
I don't know. I think that's another thing that kind of helps, that there is a definite end rather than, say, the board game Risk that just never freaking ends.
Ever.
Yeah. I would say, yeah, Eminent Domain is highly recommended. It's actually pretty compact, even though the box is slightly large. Since it's cards, you can just put them in like a card box. But definitely recommended.
I recommend it too.
Okay.
As do I.
All right. Listeners are thinking, we needed that.
All right.
Now we'll move on to the topic proper. So this episode is about the next in our Warrior series, and it's Vikings, as per request.
Yeah, I was about to say, actually our first requested episode.
Yeah.
Yay.
Well, except for the, please stop.
Oh, please stop. Well, we've had a...
How do I unsubscribe?
I was going to say, how do you unrecommend an episode? Because we got told not to do vampires.
Oh, yeah, and we did vampires.
So our first...
But we're told not to do zombies, and we didn't do zombies, yeah. So we did follow that one as well.
But I believe in the same post, we were also told not to do vampires.
No, I know. Yeah. And I think we started that episode with, and we were told not to do this. And here it is, but too bad, we already planned it. Can't go back.
Yeah.
So warriors, Vikings. So Vikings aren't really warriors, but no, there's... All right, we get the descent right away. Which is actually good, because there is a bit of a disagreement on what the word Viking means. And don't pretend like you planned that, Chris.
Way ahead of that one.
some versions would have it where it's linked to a Roman or Latin word, vicus. Others would link it to a Saxon word, wick or vic, mm-hmm. which is like a trading post. So they would say that a Viking means trader. Others link it to, it means like inlet or... fjord, or so they would say it means a warrior or a person who lives in an inlet or bay. I'm not really sure why they would get both of those out of that.
I don't know. Yeah, I saw the one that...
I guess if you live in an inlet, you've got to be a warrior. Yeah.
Well,
that's the way we roll.
Don't you mean that's the way we vic?
Because, Chris?
Well, the other ones that I read was vica, which meant it was kind of a measure of distance over water that ships traveled. Also the to go a Viking, which was to go on an expedition.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we don't know what it means, but...
But, I mean, a lot of them have a common root of, like, some sort of water and travel,
mm-hmm.
which is what the Vikings did. You know, they traveled. And
on
they
water.
Traded.
And they raided.
Oh, traded. Did I say raided?
No, you said traded, and I said,
oh, and raided. Yeah. Oh, okay. I was going to say, with most of our Warriors episodes, there's only been one, but we've got another one planned. We're going to start off with their characteristics or their qualities, or at least with their ideal qualities.
Mm. Who they were.
Or who they wanted to be.
Yeah.
But we're just going to agree with everything. Disagree on everything.
I have, you know what?
I was actually trying to support you on that.
Black or white.
You know what? This is weird. Like, we've done the episode. Not once have I disagreed with someone yet. Chris has taken on that role today.
What's
for
wrong
some
with
reason.
You, dude?
Well, you're doing my job perfectly, so...
Okay, so the first thing we're going to talk about is the virtue of hospitality. Or in Icelandic, which we found is what people consider the closest to Old Norse.
Which we also found it is really, really, really hard to pronounce.
Right, so we use Google Translate to try to help us with this.
Good luck.
So, okay, that's my job then. So hospitality or... Gostrisni? Oh... Let me try that again. Gestrisi.
I didn't realize Vikings spoke Italian. Jeez.
Just to say, hey, I got Gestrisi. It's a hospitality.
No, that wasn't sing-song enough? I'm trying to do like a Scandinavian accent. Gestrisi? Now I'm trying to do Age of Mythology, you know. You know, when you get the little workers in Age of Mythology, the Norse workers, and you click on them and then they'll say a little thing.
I don't know. Frithart.
What could you do? Anyway.
Hospitality.
So hospitality.
Hospitality.
You got back to Italian.
Yeah, back to Italian. Oh, wow.
I thought that was my Greek. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, hospitality is also very close to generosity. And when it's kind of doing research for this episode, I kind of put them together because, you know, they're both, as anybody knows, the idea of kind of giving things away and not being selfish.
Yeah.
And I think, I mean, if you look at a lot of, even if you look at it like Game of Thrones or mm-hmm. Song of Ice and Fire, certainly Martin plays on the idea of hospitality a lot.
Yeah.
And that people who violate hospitality are, I mean, it's considered a, I don't know if they use the word sin in that world in Westeros, but it's considered a gross violation of the cultural norms.
I think they may have said cursed.
Yeah, a cursed person is a, or somebody who breaks hospitality could be cursed.
When I kind of looked this up, I think the explanation they gave for the idea of hospitality and generosity was because generally the lands that the Vikings lived on were pretty crappy agricultural-wise, and they also had like really harsh winters. So the idea was everybody, kind of twofold, everybody has to work together, and you know, if you help this person out when they need it, then the idea is they would help you out when you needed it.
Yeah, it's reciprocal.
And the other idea was kind of the idea that desperate people end up doing desperate things. So it was kind of a way to, I guess, prevent violence or other kind of acts of thievery or you know, I can't, I'm drawing a blank here. Yeah, but
when I looked that up, I found a old Norse proverb, which was, Gorser e til gireda, which is a gift always looks for return.
Yeah, there's one story. And I kind of gets into what you're saying. It's a guy finds another guy who's all frostbitten in the winter, and as opposed to the summer.
Well, they might be frostbitten at the summer in Iceland.
Yeah, that's true.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So it just means he was really frostbitten.
Really frostbitten. And because he was covered in furs or whatever, he couldn't see his face. So he brings him into the house, this complete stranger, and nurses him back to health. And I guess as he recovers, he recognizes the guy as somebody he has a blood feud with. But since he's brought him into the house and fed him, then he's bound by the rules of hospitality.
Yeah.
And, of course, the other guys, you know, the guys helped him out. So they put a kind of like a truce on the blood feud until the guy leaves the house. Yeah, but he also kind of wonders, like, why the blood feud would continue after that.
Yeah, right.
At least for the other guys, like, hey, you thank know, you.
We cool.
Well, I guess, maybe not to jump ahead, but that I would say that maybe that kind of gets a little bit into honor, a little bit, the blood feud, because like it may have been an entire family. You know, blood feud kind of means like these families are warring. So even though you help this one guy out, it may not be his sole decision to end the feud.
Yeah.
You know, so. But I was going to say there was another story about kind of generosity where it was kind of like a comical story about this Viking kind of chieftain. And anytime he got a gift, he would try and kind of give it back for this idea of generosity or give a higher value gift.
He invented regifting?
No, he didn't. No, sorry, I said that wrong. He didn't invent regifting because he didn't give the gift back. But, you know, the idea that a gift always looks to be kind of reciprocated. Yeah. He'd always give a gift of higher value.
Mm-hmm.
And so kind of the joke is he kept getting better and better stuff. And since kind of status is based on wealth, he kind of ended up being highly respected and kind of like a Viking king just because he was trying to follow this idea, ideal so closely.
Like the ancient Red Pen story, ancient version of the Red Pen, eBay Red Pen. Oh, a guy, he went on eBay and he said, I have a red pen. Somebody give me something better for this red pen. And eventually it got where he got like a fish pen and kind of went on and on and on until he was getting like a recording studio. And then he got a car and he eventually got this enormous mansion, but just getting one step better all the way.
Is that true?
Yeah.
Who did he give the mansion to?
I think he may have ended there. I don't remember.
Ah, so he kind of was greedy rather than generous.
When you get a mansion out of a pen, go for it, man.
the image is, I have this red pen. Someone must give me something better for it. Apparently, it's a lot funnier in my mind.
Your brain cells are just laughing. Less than a gut. If we had guts, we would bust them. Well, there's actually, even though it is an ideal, there's a funny satirization of the concept of hospitality. And the Vikings like to make fun of each other, or Norse people like to make fun of each other.
And we don't?
Yeah, I guess we're all Vikings. He welcomes me as a guest only if I need nothing to eat, or if two hams still hang from his rafters after I've eaten one. Guess that was a lot funnier for the Vikings.
Your brain cells are busting the gut right now, aren't they? Oh, man, if they had a gut, they'd be busting it.
My Viking ancestors are going, yeah.
Some old Norse in here, they'd be on the floor.
It loses something in the telling.
The translation, yeah.
No.
So kind of like we said in Bankers about how like a paladin could give away money or like a faithful could give away money to a church and actually have someone do something with the money. You could apply the same principle in like a game where you had like a Viking-esque culture where the idea is that the character would be sort of giving away wealth because that's just what people do. People are kind of generous and, you know, kind of withholding this gold or things could be seen as stingy.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I read sort of in like the class structure, again, the elders of Viking society, they were kind of expected to be generous. They kind of, I guess, paid for influence a little bit, but it was seen as being more kind of friendly than that, and not so much buying influence.
Yeah, that whole hospitality thing goes well into with PC groups. I think, what did you refer to them in Bankers? Murder hobos?
Yeah, murder hobos.
Oh, PC groups.
Yeah. So, yeah, you could find, probably pretty easy to find lodging for that, especially, you know, if you're clearing all the monsters out of the nearby hills.
One thing, just to get back to the generosity, sorry.
Leave hospitality in the dust!
I'll get to yours in a sec. Is that the pay it forward? So if you give something, the idea is that the person has to give something to somebody else. And that could be, I don't know, you see where that goes, and that could come back to the player character. Mm-hmm. Like they did something and then somehow they get like help later on because they set off a series of events.
So I have to see it. The PCs give away a red quill before they go to tackle the dungeon. By the time they come back, they say, oh, we have a mansion deed in your name. What? How did that happen? Again.
Funnier.
My brain cells find that funnier.
In the villains episode, we talked about how to have reoccurring villains, and hospitality could be one of those. So you were saying, like, in lodgings, but maybe the person giving them lodgings is the villain, and they are bound by certain conventions.
Never work. PCs would just kill them.
Well, not if they would.
Not if there are serious consequences, because now, and we have to, we should bring this up now, is that Vikings also had the idea is, if you're doing it to a foreigner, it's okay. Mm-hmm. Like an outsider, then all of these virtues, it's okay to break them.
Kind of ignore them, yeah.
Yeah, but if the person's in kind of the same social group or the same ethnic group or however you want to define it in your same country, then they would be bound by the thing of hospitality. Or, and I don't want to ruin any books, but if they break them, then people are just going to be waiting for the serious consequences that are going to happen to them. Mm-hmm. So if they like kill this villain, they can justify all they want by just saying, "But you broke the laws of hospitality. Now, you know, a whole S storm is going to be coming your way."
Yeah,
yeah. I was going to say if the PCs and the villain are part of this kind of Viking S group, then if they were actually sort of trying to play up these ideals, then it could work. I mean, if they were just, you know, outsiders, then they're not gonna get it.
Yeah, but. Depending on how fantastic your campaign is, one of the big things that they did to support this idea of hospitality was apparently it was quite common in Norse stories that gods would disguise themselves as regular people and then try and stay at someone's house.
Like Odin would travel around as like an old traveler. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Who knows? The person visiting could be a god. That would really suck to turn him away.
Mm-hmm. And they say some Scandinavian cultures, maybe especially the Swedes, they would, like, outdo themselves to try to help a stranger.
Well, you know, just think about it in a kind of a natural sense. I mean, you're in a place that cold. You know, if you can't get home, you have to stop somewhere. You're going to freeze to death outside. So, yeah, it just makes sense.
Yeah, it's that reciprocal thing. Hmm. Because then that might be you next time.
Exactly.
Out in the cold.
This time me. Next
pretending
time
to be a god.
And a similar virtue would be os or honesty. Or in Icelandic, honesty would be hardaleka.
Yeah, all right. I'm sure any...
That wasn't Luigi saying that.
No, it wasn't.
That was a bit more on the Bjork side of things, which is good, so...
Yeah.
No, kind of similar to, I guess, hospitality. Mm. The idea of kind of like oath-breaking or kind of breaking your word after you kind of gave it is seen as a pretty big taboo in Viking culture. I guess it's almost simply like what your reputation is set on, the fact that you're keeping your word and after you gave it. And I read that since Vikings were at one point kind of pre-literate, verbal agreements were usually witnessed by, I guess, a witness. Well, that came out good. And, you know, sealed with a handshake.
How do they do that?
Yeah. So that, you know, kind of everybody, or at least another party, knew that you had made this agreement. So it wasn't just one person's word against another. Mm-hmm. I think that would be, you could even take that into like a, not to jump ahead, but you could take that into like a science fiction setting. It could be so far in the future that, no, sort of information can be falsified so easily now that agreements only kind of stand when they are face-to-face parties and sealed with a handshake, just because it's so easy to falsify other kinds of information or documents or contracts, that now this is sort of seen as the only verifiable kind of contract. Hmm.
Now, of course, you can break an oath to an outsider, or you can break an oath if you're tricked.
Yeah, that's the one thing I saw, that it was okay to lie if you're being lied to.
Oh, what is it? There's a proverb, when making an agreement, make sure one person's not holding the sword and the other holding the sheath.
That's cool. I like that.
Wasn't it make sure you're not holding the sheath?
Okay, but maybe it was more. specific. But I guess a fair deal then would be both of you are holding
a sword.
Sword, I guess.
Yeah, it's interesting. They're saying, like, in the cases where people made deals or promises like that, and if they were reneged on afterwards, it was pretty Machiavellian. It was, in the end, how things turned out was more important than how they transcribed their way through.
Oh, really?
Again, from what I read.
Now, you could break the oath if you were tricked into it, but you could also then follow through on the oath or whatever you decided, because that would bring even more honor to you and even more dishonor to the person that tricked you, even though, like, you openly acknowledge that you were kind of tricked into making this oath. Of course, spread the word, then you can make things a lot worse for the other person.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah, that kind
of just kind of a series of events, again, that can kind of lead off from one oath. And of course, you know, both of them are trying to, you can also play, you know, making that deal or making that oath, and both of them are trying to be the one holding the sword.
Oh yeah, again, that kind of reminds me of the White Wolf game Changeling, where they actually had a mechanic for kind of making oaths that way, where both parties had to live up to their end of the deal, and if somebody broke it, then, you know, something bad would usually happen. They were supernatural, but I kind of liked that mechanic, even though it was sort of more supernatural. A really good book for doing this research was Vikings of Legend by Peter Nash for Mongoose's Legend, which is kind of the rebranded RuneQuest game.
Oh.
They had some ideas in there where if you were doing like a historical game, then some of the more supernatural effects could be represented by psychosomatic effects. Or if you were doing like a more sort of high fantasy game, it could actually be magic.
Mm-hmm.
So if you actually were kind of doing this, I guess, oath-breaking thing and you wanted a mechanic, you could use like a mechanic similar to the Changeling game, where the bad effect isn't actually magic. It's just kind of because this is so ingrained in the Viking culture, the person kind of knows they broke the oath, and so it's almost like a sort of a self-fulfilling prophecy where they kind of cause this bad luck on themselves, even though nothing's actually doing it.
There would be like, yeah, bad luck aspect, or you could just play up the stigma.
Yeah, how no one else is going to make a deal with you now because you broke it.
Now, of course, you have a bunch of murder hobos just traveling dungeon to dungeon.
Well,
I see that those orcs are attacking us much more quickly. But if you do have something in your game where there is like some sort of social interaction, then that can really come into play if you have oath breakers.
Yeah, I guess it's kind of in like a traditional fantasy game, none of this really matters since it doesn't, you know, apply to outsiders. Because think of how many races are in like a standard D&D game. You're like, well, I don't have to keep my word or be honorable to anybody because everybody else is outside of this culture.
Well, it's how you define it. I mean, it could be the people in the city, or it could be the people in the kingdom. And, if the kingdom accepts different races, then... Yeah. Anybody there would apply.
Oh, definitely. I was just saying, like, if you base it on race, you're just like, all right, well.
It could be your order, like your knightly order or your paladin order or something like, it could be your thieves guild.
Or whoever's on your starship.
Yeah, or in your star system.
You can flip it if it's like some sort of thieves guild. Yeah, it could be on the starship. That's good. Yeah, but you flip it on whoever's in the thieves guild. You want a trick and you want to be the one holding the sword, of course. And you could bring even more dishonor to let it be known that you got that person to agree to the oath because you tricked them.
Mm. Oh, yeah, that's a pretty good one, too. Yeah.
The Order of Loki.
The anti-Viking, yeah.
Yeah, the anti-Viking. He's very pleasant.
I think the way that the Vikings actually did it, I don't want to jump too far ahead, but they had kind of law areas where their version of the law took effect, and people outside of that area, including other Viking tribes, were free game.
I kind of had this Judge Dredd image in my head where, okay, in a 10-foot radius around me, Viking law applies. I am the law. You just walk around. Nope, you're in the law zone. I'm glad that one was actually funny and not only to me.
The next virtue is clever. And in Icelandic, that would be, and this is the really hard one. No, actually, the other one's pretty hard.
They're all hard. Yeah.
Chal. Chal. Tanal.
Keep saying it, you'll eventually get it right.
I don't
there
think
are five consonants and one vowel in this word. S-N-J-A-L-L.
I'm not going to try.
No.
All I'm going to do is make fun of you for trying.
Just put your hand in front of your mouth for the first half and then try to go, ow.
Yeah.
Oh, that was your attempt? All right.
Yeah. And that's to be clever. Mm. And Vikings really respected cleverness. And there's one example, a real-life example, where somebody used, a Viking leader used his cleverness to get into a town, where he sent in a messenger saying, and he knew the mayor or the leader in the town was Christian, so he said that he wanted to bury some people in the town, like a Christian burial, because some of his men were Christian.
Mm-hmm.
So could he bring them in? And they're like, oh, well, of course, you know. So they brought horse. Yeah. And they brought in these Trojan horse, this Viking horse, and they took the town. And even though he was kind of violating, like, hospitality by being, like, a bad guest, but it was to an outsider, so who cares?
Yeah.
But they respected how clever he was in achieving what he needed to achieve. Yeah
it kind of reminds me of Arate from Hoplites, the idea of kind of being excellent in everything.
Mm-hmm.
Because, yeah, even though it was kind of dishonorable to deceive someone in Viking culture, it kind of had that, what's the word I'm looking for? It would almost had like the other side of the coin where, yeah, if you were so clever and you were like kind of like so, if you deceived this guy so well, then it was kind of acceptable, kind of didn't break your honor. So I think that's...
Well, you know, with honesty, I think there's a big difference between outright lying to someone and deceiving them with a clever trick.
Mm.
So.
Yeah, I suppose that's true. Sometimes that can be kind of hard to reconcile
with. It's not
that
you did it, it's how well you did it.
Yeah, exactly.
No, they also respected certain things, just getting into the arate part, is they liked things that we would normally wouldn't associate with Vikings, like somebody's ability to dance or to sing or to be quite clever, because if you can make, you know, get a good one and get a zinger in on somebody else, it raises your status and lowers the other person. So it was just one more thing to respect in a person. It's just how clever. Of course, there was a fine line. Because, you know, you could be too clever.
And then get an X in your face.
Well, that's not really a fine line. But it's how it could be perceived. Like, you know, if you achieve something through cleverness, it could be seen as being kind of cowardly. Like maybe you didn't want to do the more manly or courageous way to do it. You use tricks. Hmm. And of course, it can also be looked as deceitful. So people wouldn't trust you.
Yeah, I think there's a really good example from Viking mythology or Norse mythology that kind of hits all three of those ideas of courage, honor, and deceit, which is when the gods bound Fenris, or Fenrir. Because there was a time when Fenris was actually living in Asgard with all the gods, but they saw that he was getting way too big and was way too dangerous to let loose. So what happened is they tried to bind him with chains twice, and he was just so big and massive that he broke the chains both times. So what they did is they made a really, really thin chain from these, like, six impossible objects that the dwarves helped them build. And they sort of tricked Fenris by saying, okay, we want to see if you can break this chain as well. And because it was so small, Fenris kind of agreed, but he had a stipulation. He didn't trust them, so he said, okay, I'll do it, but one of you has to put your hand in my mouth, so I know you're not trying to trick me. And the god Tyr, knowing that they were tricking Fenris and knowing that he was going to lose his hand, stepped up and said, yeah, okay, I'll put my hand in your mouth.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what happened. The chain was unbreakable. Fenris bit off Tyr's hand, and that's why the god has one hand. But I think it kind of hits all three. It is, yeah, they were kind of dishonorable. The gods broke their word, but they did it in a clever way. Tyr knew he was going to lose his hand, but had, like, the courage to step up and do it. And the honor thing, because Tyr could have just snatched his hand out of his mouth before he lost it, but he didn't, so.
And he was generous enough to donate a hand to the cause.
Okay. So it hits all of them, yeah. And hospitality, because they were letting Fenris live in Asgard. All right. So there, you can sum up.
Well, they fed him.
Yeah, exactly. You can sum up Viking right there. That one story, the binding of Fenris. Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know.
I said that was awesome.
No, it's a great story.
It is, it really is.
Also a really great song.
Is this one of your death metal bands?
Yeah.
Black Viking bands?
Yeah. Chris and I were playing it earlier, and we had a deal going. How many steps do you take into the apartment before you told us to shut it off?
Unfortunately, it ran out. The CD ran out before you got
there. Oh, you listened to the entire CD?
It was pretty good.
Oh, nerds.
It was better than I thought.
It's really hard to play a clever person if you're not clever.
This is true.
Yeah.
Or rather, the correct answer is, I wouldn't know.
Because you've never tried to play a clever person.
Oh, damn it. Zing. One more step and you're going to get an axe in your face.
It'll be worth it.
As we've said in past episodes, that may just kind of be a thing where you have to let kind of the character stats take over. Then again, just kind of like rolling dice and saying, I'm really smart, kind of doesn't really cut it.
You
know?
Yeah.
I rolled a 20. I tricked you. Yeah, zing.
That's a tough call. It really is. And it's really hard to say to somebody, it's like, no, you shouldn't play the clever guy. Why is that? I don't know. I seem more masculine, you know.
You always play the clever guy. Let's try.
Really?
Yeah.
I usually play the barbarian.
Have you ever tried the big dumb fighter? Well, yeah, you should give that a go.
Again?
Oh, yeah. I thought you were great in that role. Do it again. Yeah.
I don't want to get typecast. Well, you know. But the person's got to give something, even if it's the start of the idea. Like if they want to do some sort of elaborate plan, if they're doing zingers or something to, you know, cause dishonor or somebody to have another person lose face, they got to give you something to go with. Even if it's to say, I start a riddle contest, which the Vikings did.
And then quote the ones from Lord of the Rings, and you're like, oh, dude, give me something new.
What do I have in my pockets?
Yeah. I mean, even like saying that they start the riddle contest is giving you something.
Yeah, that's true.
And then they can roll, and I don't know. Because you also got to think, as you as a game master, you're like, well, I didn't pick to be a clever guy. But if you've got to match wits with them, you know, then it might just be die rolling. But you could perhaps in a situation like that, you could encourage everybody to kind of, you know, divide everybody up in the riddle contest or whatever contest, and just to make it fun and interactive for so everybody's engaged. But the dice will actually determine who's going to win. But at least people are involved.
Yeah. Or I was thinking, like, if the entire PC group is sort of from this Viking-inspired culture, then I'm sure they would kind of chime in to offer ideas and kind of help, and that could be a good way to get everybody involved, even though it's sort of the one character who kind of delivers the final sting. Mm. But I was thinking, I don't know, you probably couldn't do it in 4th edition, but, like, the bards have that mocking strike power. So, like, multi-class barbarian and bard, you're like, I'm going to give a real good zing with that mocking strike, which, and you're like, oh, and you're going against rats, so they don't understand.
Well, I mean, if you're going to do something like that, you can
and you lose. Yeah,
against the rats!
Oh, squeak! Now, you could always do it where the dice just determine the reaction. You know, the person can give whatever kind of insult or zinger they want to do, but then you roll to see how much the person takes it.
I could see, like, man, that was an awesome insult, and I rolled a 20. You know, he doesn't bat an eye.
He didn't really like his mama.
As it turns out.
His mama is that big.
Well, yes, she is quite fat.
Yeah,
and she does have a beard. She could probably kick your ass, too.
Do you know her?
We've all had a go. Why?
Her nickname was Town Bicycle.
We don't even know what a bicycle is.
Wouldn't it be? She was a town longship. Everybody's had to pull on her.
Well, she's had to pull on everybody?
I guess, yeah.
Everybody's pulled her?
It's one of those things, like, if you think about it too much, it falls apart. Yeah.
Right.
Moving on from your mama Viking jokes.
And the last virtue is luck. I don't think this is a Viking expression, but, you know, it's better to be lucky than good. Mm. And they definitely believed that luck was something that separated a good man, a really good man, from a great man, because there's always need that little extra something to be a great hero. So their heroes in their stories would always have, like, some element of luck that helped them win.
Yeah, they always, not always, but they, I would say they frequently carried, like, lucky talismans, and they really did think that luck was kind of like a tangible thing, and that, you know, good luck would kind of
Hey, I interrupted you on interrupt.
Well timed, sir.
How clever. Well, that was lucky.
So that was good enough not for me to retaliate. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, see? Yeah. And the Icelandic for luck is gangiprevel.
Thank you.
I find if you say it really fast.
With a hand over your mouth?
Looking away.
Anyway, I was going to say that luck was kind of seen as like a tangible thing, and that, you know, if you, you know, kind of hung out with someone who was seen as lucky, then it was understood that some of that would rub off on you. And the same with bad luck. Like, even if that person was your friend, if they were kind of seen as being unlucky, then you kind of wouldn't really, you could feel sorry for them and you could kind of help them out a little bit, but you wouldn't really associate with them all that much just because they were kind of seen as being unlucky. I guess it kind of goes into superstition a little bit as well. And one of the big kind of unlucky things was to loot armor off of a dead body.
No, I didn't read that.
Because
that is very different from our Hoplites episode, because that's exactly what they would do.
Yeah, the idea with Viking culture was, no, this armor is unlucky because it didn't protect its wearer, because the guy's dead, right?
That's cool.
And so the idea is that ill luck is contained in the armor, and if you put it on, that's going to transfer over to you.
And the Greeks go, hey, look, free armor.
Yeah, it's free armor. Let me just patch this hole, and it's good as new. Yeah.
Oh, since we're talking about armor, though, I remember in our Hoplites episode, we talked about trophies that they would put on the battlefield, and I've since learned that these trophies would consist of armor and weapons that they've taken.
Perhaps the most radius and whole field armor.
No, the best.
Really?
I was reading the Aeneid by Virgil, and even it's like the Trojans going to Rome and founding Rome, and they, of course, they're very Greek culture. And yeah, that's what he sets up a trophy, and it's like the highest, I believe he was a king that they killed. So they used his weapons and armor and set them up as the trophy, because it's a single, like, look who he killed. I mean, if you set up like like sling? Is that a sling?
Yeah.
Is that a piece of wood?
Yeah, what's that on that pole? Nothing. Yeah, because we killed someone with no armor.
Yeah. Is that a sack? No, that's his. That was his shirt. Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
Yeah, I like that because it's kind of pretty. It's very different from our modern take on it. A person who relies largely on luck isn't considered, you know, to be a hero. That's he's kind of looked down upon.
Yeah, you'd be quite dismissive to say he's lucky.
Yeah,
he's not good. He's just lucky. Yeah.
So, would you guys do something with that in a game? Would you represent that with maybe like a luck die roll or a luck mechanic?
I think you could do more than just saying it's a luck mechanic. I mean, some games have like hero points and just different things like that that they have over. Savage Worlds has a
bennies.
No, but they also have like wild cards.
Oh, the wild die.
The wild die. Mm-hmm. Like, so, in a sense, they already have luck because they have that little something extra.
Kind of, but that the wild die, and for that matter, the bennies too, as well as the hero points, is something that everyone gets an equal amount of.
Well,
but if you had a hero who has more luck, he's a lucky person, don't you think he should get a little bit more?
Well, yes and no, because in Savage Worlds, extras don't get the wild die and they don't get bennies.
Right, but you're always going to be playing the...
Yeah,
wild card.
But you're always going to be a wild card. You're a hero. Therefore, you should get the luck. And important NPCs that are made wild cards, they also have luck.
That's a good
point. I think it kind of works in that respect, as here is this kind of extra. He's a mook. He doesn't have any luck. So, therefore, we're going to beat him pretty easily.
Yeah, it's a good idea.
No, I was just saying, like, you broadened out. You could essentially say that any of these bonuses that are built into almost every system to give the player characters a little something-something.
Yeah. A little something-something.
A little something-something. That something-something is
what's
luck.
The Icelandic for that? But actually, I think I'm saying that there is a feat you can take in Savage Worlds that gives you extra luck.
Yeah.
I believe it's called Lucky.
Yeah.
Kids
also get an extra Benny.
Or
because
something.
You're not supposed to hurt them.
A lot of game systems do have like a luck advantage or something that you can take. Like GURPS has it as well. That's great to add. I certainly like that bad luck idea. Mm-hmm. It'd be like you go through a dungeon and come back with nothing because it was all belonged to somebody else.
That's where.
But then you also contrast that with the fact that the raiders, so they raided all the stuff, and it's like, well, you could take it from them, so isn't it unlucky now? Or
well, no, I was going to say, but I think that only applied to armor.
Oh, okay.
The unlucky thing only applied to armor. I'm pretty sure it didn't apply to weapons. But again, that Vikings a Legend book for Mongoose, that's where the psychosomatic thing also came into play. Again, they suggested if you're doing a fantasy game, it actually is bad luck. Whereas if you're doing a historical game, no, it's just this is so ingrained in the culture that stealing someone's, a beaten foe's armor is kind of so taboo that you kind of start to think that you have bad luck. Mm. But again, like everything in Viking, it didn't apply to foreigners, so you could totally steal that armor, not use it, and then sell it to someone else who was stupid enough to buy it, and then, hey, that's a way to get rid of it. So long as, I think the bad luck only kind of rubbed off if you wore the armor. It might screw up the math in like D&D. You beat some big boss and you're like, oh, great, look at that awesome, like, +8 armor. And nobody's touching it because, you know, it'd be bad.
A massive
luck
hole in the chest.
Well, yeah, that too.
Speaking of death, Vikings saw the value of a good death.
Again, isn't that kind of similar to like hoplites a little bit?
I think most people want to have a good death in history.
Well, and we should say that meant in bed at 90 with a beautiful woman who is not 90.
If she's beautiful, she
can't. That would be my stipulation.
If she's beautiful, she can't still be 90. Can't be 90.
No, if you're 90, is like even 70 is beautiful, I guess.
No.
They obviously they a glorious death.
Let's get back onto the road here.
That kind of goes a little back to courage a little bit, you know, because the idea of a good death kind of means you know you're going to... I'm getting somewhere.
Yeah, me too. I was just trying to think how I can connect that to sleeping with a 90-year-old woman.
All right.
No, I'm just... I thought it was funny because you say it goes back to courage, which we never really introduced.
Oh, we didn't?
Remember, we decided not to introduce that virtue.
Oh, all right.
Because everybody's courageous.
Yeah. Oh, all right.
Yeah.
Well, it kind of goes...
What does it go back to? Thing we didn't talk about.
Yeah, it goes back to the thing we didn't talk about. All right. Yeah, I'll start that section over then.
No, that's actually funny.
All right, fine. Anyway, but the idea is... or maybe, not honor, but anyway, you know you're going to lose. You know you're going to lose this fight. There's kind of, there's no way you can win this, but you're still going to try, right? You're still going to go and face it because you'd rather kind of die as someone who kind of stepped up to his foes and tried to win rather than someone who just kind of, you know, ran away and didn't try and was kind of seen as being dishonorable or non-courageous, you know?
Yeah. And if you look at a good death, a really good example is in the movie 13 Warriors.
Yeah, I was thinking mm-hmm. that.
And when they think they're all going to die at the end. Oops.
Spoiler.
Is that really a spoiler? Oh, there's a big battle at the end. Come on.
All right, that's right. Premise.
Well, we didn't say whether or not they actually do die. Just at the
exactly. Yeah, okay, great. Thank you. Thanks for the save. That's the cleverness there. And then they do their death song. It's called, or like a death poem mm-hmm. at the end. You know?
And I thought Antonio Banderas was a bit hammy during it.
Yeah. It's like, I see my fathers and my father's fathers or something like that.
My line back to the beginning of time.
Yeah.
No, that's true. That's a good one.
Yeah.
I was also kind of thinking during that, the fight, you know, the one-on-one fight, even though the one guy is so much bigger than the opponent,
mm-hmm.
and he just kind of said, no, I have to do this because kind of I started it, and it would be dishonorable to kind of slink away and not do it.
Is it the redheaded guy?
Yeah.
No, but that was all part of the plan.
I know it was part of the
He was going to beat him from the get-go.
Yeah, I know, but...
He knew the big guy was overmatched, but he wanted that. He's like, pick their biggest guy.
Right.
And then their smallest guy takes on their biggest guy. So imagine what their leader would do.
Yeah, but that kind of...
And that is a spoiler.
Well, that kind of gets into it, right?
Spoiler.
That kind of gets into it. Like, to everyone else looking around, they didn't know the end result.
Yeah, but it was the virtue. To me, that was the virtue of cleverness.
Mm-hmm. Okay, fair enough.
Yeah. Because he certainly wasn't
He wasn't being generous.
All right. Oh, yeah. He wasn't being generous. He wasn't offering hospitality.
Or courageous or honorable.
All right. So that kind of only leaves one. All right, cleverness.
Didn't
all
make
right,
any
you got me. Man, you tripped me up into that one. Well done. You're clever. All right.
Yeah. And if you can't do a death poem or death song, there's a good example in, I can't pronounce this, but...
You're not going to try? All right. Now, you've got to be courageous.
Najal Saga. The courage there. which is, if you can't do a death song, be funny. And this is a pretty famous story, but there's a guy named Gunnar. That was actually kind of easy, you know. Like the Nelson twins, Gunnar Nelson. And you guys don't know that?
All
right. I know the name, yeah.
You can get too clever for your own good.
All right. There's a guy named Gunnar, and he's in the house, and it was during a feud, and they wanted to get at him. And it was considered dishonorable to, like, burn down the house, which kind of would have taken care of Gunnar. So they send one guy up to see if Gunnar's inside, and Gunnar sticks his war spear through, like a little slot, and the guy staggers back, and the leader comes up and says, is Gunnar there? He goes, go check out for yourself. I don't know if he's there, but his war spear certainly is.
And the topper is the guy then dies.
And the guy dies. Yeah. That was the real punchline.
That's a good death.
Yeah, and I'm sure all the Scandinavian people out there are rolling in their chairs because that's so funny, but...
That's funny. I kind of ruined it a bit, but, you know.
Well, I left that part out, but... Zing!
I'm still Scandinavians are rolling their chairs if you hadn't ruined it.
Wow. I didn't say that, but... That's another way to kind of make your character feel a bit more Viking is to, if you die, rather than going, oh, crap, and like throwing down the dice, not come up with something funny to say, or at least humorous.
Or give a poem.
Or give a poem, death poem, yeah.
Do this humor. Be shorter.
All your the people you're playing with at the table just sitting there bored, or you stand up and start reading out your poem.
Yeah. That's very samurai.
Yeah.
Writing like a little death poem.
That'd be a way for the GM not to ever kill your character, because they know you have this epic poem prepared to read. See? Goes back to cleverness. I've got this long death poem. All right, it won't kill you then.
Mm. Yeah, and I guess, you know, I mean, it also links back to courage.
Which we didn't reference?
Well, we've referenced it now. Now you can link back.
All right, now, after I do it, thanks. Yeah.
Yeah.
Set me up again.
So you have, like, people that were, like, fearless, and I guess we would be amiss if we didn't do warriors and didn't mention berserkers.
Yeah.
All right, so moving along.
Yeah, we mentioned them. All right.
Check.
It's pretty unclear why they were separate from other warriors in the Viking culture.
Were they on drugs? Were they crazy?
That's one theory. There's,
There's a lot of stuff, but nobody really knows that much about them.
Yeah. And we didn't talk about this virtue, but tenacity is kind of also a virtue in Viking culture, too. So it could just be, you know, I'm just going to keep going, you know.
Mm.
I'm just not going to give up, even though I technically know I'm kind of dead already, but I'm just going to keep going.
Right, but a lot of, like, Germanic tribes and Scandinavian tribes in war, and this is, like, dates back, like, centuries before even the Vikings were around, and it's certainly not unique, they would see, like, yelling as being very intimidating.
Yeah,
it's funny when you read about, like, ancient warfare or medieval warfare, just how much goes into morale and intimidation. And
psychological warfare.
Well, that's the whole reason that the Romans invented boots, right?
Not to protect my feet. Oh, man. Just to make a lot of noise.
The sound of the coordinated marching was supposedly a really good breaking the enemy morale.
It was also had a good grip on the ground, hobnail boots. But yeah,
multifunction. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, this is getting into a future warriors, but I mean, the plumes were considered intimidating. It makes you look taller. Scale mail, which is worst of all the mails that are sort of the armor they had available. It was perhaps the worst metal armor, but if you polish it up, it looks really good. Apparently, so you know, people would wear it just because of the intimidation factor.
Well, since they bring it back to
Vikings. They would be quite silent actually. So they looked at all of these other proto-Viking cultures. Are yelling and screaming, so the legionaries in the early Republic, they would be do the same thing and yell back. But as they progress, they would be deathly silent.
The silent treatment, like an angry wife.
Yeah. Which can be quite scary. Yeah, it's like,
oh, I'm not married, but I imagine that can be scary as hell. Yeah.
Because it shows considerable restraint.
So that's a good preview for our next Warriors episode.
So, bringing it back to Vikings, you know, you can try to be like intimidating, because I can see... you know, there's no, I guess there's no historical evidence that Vikings actually had wings on their helmet or horns on their helmet, but...
You know who did?
Me.
The Gauls.
Okay. Oh, is that why Asterix has those wings on his helmet? Okay.
I don't know about the wings, horns.
Oh, horns, okay. Yeah.
There's evidence that they had horns.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was going to say, you could just try and have your, whatever Viking character you have, attempt to look intimidating, you know?
And scary. Horns on the helmet would help with that.
Well, I wasn't going to say horns on the helmet, but I would see, like...
That's why the samurai had those crazy helmet masks.
Yeah, yeah. I was going to say do the same thing, put like a bear's head or a bear's skull on your head, that kind of thing.
Hmm. And they did the berserkers wore wolf pelts and bear pelts and things like that.
I think that was mostly because it was cold.
Instead of armor. Or maybe not.
Well, we can get into weapons and armor. A lot of Vikings didn't wear armor just because they couldn't afford it. Mm-hmm. But when they wore armor, it tended to be mail. Mm-hmm. And they would have a round shield.
Sorry, not to cut you off.
That covered armor. And a helmet without horns.
Yeah. I was going to say, again, in that Vikings the Legend book, one of the feats they suggested, which, again, I'm sure wasn't only limited to Vikings, was the shield twirl, where the idea is you would actually allow the enemy to bury their weapon kind of in your shield and then spin it to try and disarm them so that they wouldn't have a weapon.
Oh, cool.
That's cool.
They did that in Troy, as well in 13th Warrior. Like when they're breaking the shields, but he spun the shield.
Yeah.
You know who had a way around that?
Anyone with a flail?
No, the Romans did.
I remember this is the preview for Warriors.
Preview for Warriors.
What?
Yeah.
All right. And I thought it was only about Viking, kind of preview for the next
one. Stay tuned for that.
One of the coolest things I read, and I don't know if it's true or not, because I only saw it on one webpage, but it was talking about how the Vikings used ducks to make their weapons, in that they would...
Oh, I thought that was like a story.
Oh, well, it's a paragraph, I suppose, but they would feed...
So it's a short story.
Iron...
Obviously, I meant story as in...
A tale. Yeah, sure.
Let the man finish, all right.
What they'd do is they'd take iron shavings and they'd cut them down to about the size of pieces of corn, and then they'd feed it to ducks. And after the ducks digested it and it came out on the other end, it had fused with carbon, so it was kind of like a rudimentary steel. And they would pound that together with regular iron weaponry. It would make kind of a proto-steel.
Oh, okay. I don't know if this was the Norse sword. Mm-hmm. If they used
that's just saying the sverd, which I guess is where sword came from.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, they said that those were so good. They're very rare. Mm-hmm. Vikings usually used an axe, which would be very similar to like our wood cutting axe that you find in a hardware store now. But the actual proper swords, which were highly valued and all the heroes used in the stories, the way of making it is very similar to the way a katana is made.
Oh, like folding and hammering?
Hmm. Yeah. Hmm. It's called pattern welding.
Yeah. So I don't know if it's true or not about, you know, duck poop going into their sword making, but it seemed pretty interesting.
Because they had something that's like a sword called Skamaska. One more time.
Put a little Italian in there.
Skamaska.
Skamasax. Skamasax. Which was an iron bar with a point and an edge. Mm-hmm. But they're very cheap, but they're like a cheap
version.
Oh,
was it only a single edge?
Yeah, didn't I say that?
Yeah.
A point and an edge.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Like they would achieve it by like just chipping it away. Mm-hmm. They chipped in an edge and they chipped the point in. It was quite cheap.
It sounds it, yeah.
Not as expansive as your duck poop sword.
Yeah, and then they have the Francesca, which was a woman.
I was gonna say that one actually does sound Italian.
Yeah, Francesca. It was a throwing axe. Oh.
Hmm. Yeah, I was actually surprised. Like some of the Viking technology was really impressive. Did you see the fire, the smoldering fire stuff. What was the name of it? They had this one really interesting thing where they took touchwood, which I guess is a kind of fungus that grows on trees, and they'd take it, they'd scorch it, and then they'd boil it in urine for a week or so, and it'd create this substance that would allow it to smolder, but it wouldn't burn. So it was a really safe way of transporting fire, and they could even carry fire on the longships because it doesn't burn. If it fell on the deck, you could pick it up before it would start anything on fire.
And just a little side note here, you kind of wonder how ancient technologies were invented. I mean, you feed this thing to a duck,
right?
You boil this in urine, you mix ash and animal fat to make soap. It's like,
well, look how like
leather
is made, like in a tannery, like
I mean, leather kind of makes sense because, I mean, if you skin an animal and you leave the skin out in the sun for a couple of days, it's kind of changed, so you can say, okay, well, I might explore this. But when you
like to do like a bunch of stuff to like cure stuff.
Yeah, no, that's what I'm saying. Like,
but like you can, because if you leave an animal skin out and it starts in the sun, like it starts
in its own waste. No.
Yeah, like you have to do more than just leave a skin out to make leather.
Right, but
to make proper leather,
if it gets baked in the sun, then it kind of takes on some of the properties. It doesn't rot; it dries and gets harder. You can kind of see the progression there, you know, from maybe just one accidental thing.
But I guess
who picks up duck poop and hammers it into their sword? Who
feeds iron to a duck?
No, obviously a duck ate it.
Mm-hmm.
And then he said, hey, let me try and get my iron back.
And say, oh, well, yeah, I suppose. And then if you this duck ate my sword.
What's it like? Oh, gosh. Maybe Indonesia or someplace in Asia where they still drink a coffee made from like coffee beans that have been passed through a cat or something like a cat.
Oh, God.
Never heard of that one.
In other words, been pooped out.
Yeah. I picked up what passed through meant. I didn't mean it like what?
It's passed
like,
through its paws.
It's like, it's like an interdimensional coffee
cat
bean.
Let's handle this.
Just kind of like you push it, it goes through the cat. It's like a phasing coffee bean? No.
Yeah.
So from coffee to Vikings again.
So I guess, to sum up about a Viking, even though they did make fabulous swords, yeah, pretty simple weapons and armor, and I guess the idea. But they're quite mobile, and I guess when you're on a longship, you want to keep things...
Mobile?
Probably not. You want to keep things pretty light.
Yeah. All right.
Sorry. Well, speaking of longships... I think that's a real defining characteristic of a Viking, of course. And, maybe about half of the possible meanings of Viking are related to trading or traveling.
Yeah.
And that's where their legend is born, you know, of them trading or raiding.
Hmm.
And there's like, well, that classic quote, from the fury of the Norsemen, O Lord, deliver us. And that's like the Irish monks, because they would come in and just do whatever.
Yeah,
steal whatever.
Before we started doing the episode, that was kind of one of the, I guess, quintessential sort of things about being a Viking is most of the information we have is actually sort of from the victims of Viking raids.
Which is the opposite of what most people say about history. You know, history is written by the victors or the victims.
Yeah, or the victims.
And basically, history is written by whoever can write.
Yeah. And
if you're dead, you
can't
write.
History is written by the literate.
Yeah, history is written by the literate. Yeah,
and the alive.
Yeah, that helps.
If you can't be literate, be alive.
Yeah, so we had kind of seen, like, to everyone else, the Vikings were kind of seen as like a scourge. You know, they just kind of appear out of nowhere and either trade with you if you were strong enough or just kind of steal whatever they wanted if they perceived you as being weak. So if you kind of transport that to your game, that's kind of a way that they should kind of be seen. You know, everyone else kind of sees them as something of a scourge.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah. But if you factor in everything else, then you're not making the Fireflies reavers.
Hmm.
You know, there's the... I mean, of course, that's very undeveloped and we don't know what, you know, they actually were going to do. But that's kind of one impression. If you take, like, kind of that impression, but having a rich culture behind it, then that's your Viking.
Oh, yeah.
And they're not your Klingons, because Klingons are boring.
We just lost, what, half of our audience, probably?
Yeah.
Yeah, so those few guys who are, like, dressed up as Klingons. And
oh, sorry, Klingons are boring, because the Romulans are much more interesting.
No, you lost them already.
Too late. You can't
they're gone.
Come on, light up the forums.
Yeah, excuse me, sir.
If you wish to start a debate about Rems versus Klingons, don't light up the forums. Yeah, but the longships were really, really cool. I was really impressed.
Also a very advanced technology.
Yeah. Like, it was amazing. They were light enough to carry. They could portage them over rivers and land and stuff. They were reversible.
They were flexible.
Yeah.
And so it was how they made the keel. You would imagine that you'd want a real strong keel. And they're like, no, you want a real flexible keel. And that would actually make a sturdier ship.
They also had a really shallow draft, so you could
go anywhere.
Yeah, pretty much.
Even up rivers and such. Yeah, they even had a bar that they could insert inside the sail to stiffen it so it could sail against the wind.
Whoa.
Well, I think the most impressive thing was, did you see the solar lab that they had? I see the
silence
no
means no. Silence means no. Keep going.
His lips are moving, but this isn't proof by any means. Nobody knows if this is actually the case, but there's a kind of quartz that was really common in Scandinavia. So what they figured is that they had the sun shine through this quartz, and it would reflect on a board with a arc drawn across it. So you could use the time of day with the location of the sun on the board to tell which direction you're going. It's kind of a rudimentary compass. Oh. And they say it made a lot of sense because people in more southern latitudes would use the stars to navigate. But if you're way up north there in the summertime, you have these really long days and almost no night. So you couldn't rely on the stars as a navigation. Right?
That's really cool.
So taking away from that navigation and some kind of seafaring skill would probably be...
Yeah, I mean, it's...
I think whatever world you are or whatever, if you have the Viking, I think some sort of... You're a traveler and you're not like a traveling hobo like these Reavers and Firefly with things falling apart. No, you are very, very, very sophisticated. Yeah. You'd be like the Eldar in 40K.
Yeah, yeah.
Probably
except not so wussy.
Beards and asks, yeah.
Yeah, you take the Space Wolves and combine them with Eldar, the Eldar Pirates, and there you have it.
Dark Eldar.
Yeah, they're still kind
well,
of...
minus their kind of...
With a huge, well, I think
they take slaves.
S&M.
Well, okay, minus that thing.
Yeah, but when they were taking slaves, well, I guess the Christians weren't taking slaves as much by that time, but it wasn't that different from other cultures. Mm. Not really, killing and raping wasn't that different from other cultures. So.
No, not really.
In other words,
world.
Those are two concepts that cross all nationalities, you know, common ground.
Courage, wanting to die a good death, and raping a lot. Yeah, yeah.
Right. You guys do it too, I know. But. And another example of their sophistication is their law, which... formed the basis for a lot of the things that we have in our current legal system, such as a trial by jury.
Yeah, by 12 people as well. And for that matter, judge, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, from what I read, the Viking sort of system of law was, as you said, pretty advanced, because they had the idea of an assembly, mm-hmm. you know, where kind of every person of, like, a pretty normal status was allowed to kind of, you know, go and vote and kind of have their voice heard in this kind of, in this assembly. And they said that, again... Since nobility kind of wasn't, at least hereditary, at first, it's kind of like the person standing next to you, even though he's the son of like a chieftain or whatever, now his voice counts exactly the same as yours.
Yeah, all free men were allowed to come into an assembly.
Hmm. Yeah,
did you see the name of the Viking assembly?
Yeah, the thing.
The thing. It's so cool. Yeah.
The thing.
The thing.
Thing.
I tried to
have a Scandinavian
accent.
So I guess the word thing came from...
Thing.
Gives a new meaning to that John Carpenter movie.
Yeah.
They just wanted to come down and vote.
I thought it was a remake of 12 Angry Men.
I like the name of the, I don't know the actual Old Norse name for it, but the judge person there, his name was the Lawsayer. I thought that was pretty cool.
The Lawsayer?
Yeah. Right. He says the law.
Yeah.
Say,
Shorten to the point.
What is this? Something? Yeah. He says the law. Just say what it is.
I'm not a slave. I'm a free man. Yeah.
Yeah, they're just very practical people. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of it was like a monetary compensation, which is interesting. I'm not sure how exciting that would be for a game to use monetary compensation as you just kind of sit there and negotiate how much money you pay for all that rape or slander, because that could also be brought up in front of the thing.
Wasn't there kind of also the idea of sort of might makes right?
There were duels.
The oaths as well. Or I'm sorry, not the oaths, the ordeals. Which is pretty interesting. It was if two people couldn't agree on a point or a conversation, this was usually more in a political sense than rather like a legal sense, but they could either duel or they could take an ordeal. And two of the most common ones were to take a piece of iron that had been boiling in water.
No? Is it stones from water and iron that's red
and
hot?
Heated?
I read the opposite, actually. It was walk across hot stones for 12 paces or carry an iron bar that had been boiling in water for 9 paces.
Okay. Another one I heard is they put their hand in boiling water to grab two stones to pull them out. Another is to carry a red-hot iron bar, but I assume that it had been heated by fire as opposed to water.
I suppose it wouldn't get red-hot in water. Hey?
And then they got to carry it to a trough of water. But I'm sure there's a lot of variations of
hot. I think the basic is you have to do something that's going to hurt a lot, to prove, A, you're a man, and B, kind of might.
Am I going to touch that ice? No. Touching something hot.
I'm good. I'm okay.
Yeah, well, it was also kind of, I heard that it was really kind of dishonorable, disrespectful to abuse or kill or mistreat women, except when you were on a Viking raid, and of course that didn't extend to foreigners.
But they were outsiders.
Yeah, but again, I read that like even if you had like a blood feud with a family and you sort of went to go and attack their house and kind of burn down their house, you kind of had to allow the women and children to leave first if you wanted to. But of course, it was also the women's right to sort of stay and die with their sons and husbands, which I kind of imagine any sort of courageous Viking woman would do.
I think that traces back to the, and you touched on it right at the beginning, is when you're talking about the blood feud, is that they have a very strong connection to their family, and even when a woman gets married, she doesn't sever that relationship.
Oh, no, no.
So if you abused a Viking woman, you'd have to deal with her enraged kinsman.
Kind of like trailer trash.
Yeah, I guess.
You know, bringing it back to that Norse flame of Hamilton.
Because us more civilized folks, we don't get angry when our women are mistreated.
It's certainly not a jump-off point for any game that you probably want to play. Even I don't think even we have ever tried to do that.
Correction, not even you, Wayne, would do something like that.
Yeah, I suppose, like domestic abuse. But that could trace back to a blood feud, is that... I suppose a variation of that, I'm not sure I want to touch domestic abuse ever in a game, but somebody does something unsavory, but you're obligated by, he's your kinsman or kinswoman, so you're obligated to protect that person, but really what they did is quite despicable. It could be a nice moral dilemma. I probably wouldn't use domestic abuse as that.
Yeah. Getting back to law, one of the other comments.
And away from the domestic abuse.
Sorry, did you have more domestic abuse you want to talk about?
I don't do it.
Okay. Red Hands would like to not recommend domestic abuse.
That's for you kids.
Yeah. Exile was one of the common punishments through Viking law. And one thing I read was saying that they think a lot of the early raids were from exile. The Vikings treasured their possessions, and someone who was exiled would still be allowed to keep a lot of their possessions. And if that included a ship, it might be...
Isn't that how, like, either Greenland or Iceland was founded?
Leif Erikspin?
I heard it was kind of like... As Viking culture progressed from kind of associated tribes to kind of more kings with slightly more power, it was raids, and it was also kind of people looking to kind of not get out from under the yoke of someone else's leadership, but it's like, okay, if I live here in this extended family, I'm underneath this guy's kind of rule, and you know what? No, I want to go be my own kind of king and master.
Didn't Eric the Red get into some trouble?
Oh, no. That was exile.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's the thing, though. So, I mean, people who are already labeled criminals, they're kicked out, and they have a boat, and they have to support themselves somehow, so raiding's the way. But what you're saying, Wayne, is I think, from what I've read, is as their culture and technology progressed, they were able to, you know, give more agriculture, which just meant more people. And since they were a lot of times living on these small islands, they just ran out of space, and a lot of people just wanted to leave and started their
own things. Kind of from trade. Sorry, the lands are very poor agriculture-wise, but as they kind of increased trade, they could support a larger population, but there was just kind of less land.
Well, something for a game would be, a great jump-off point is exile ostracization.
Yeah, I think
that's why they're traveling.
That's why they're together, because you're all exiles.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think if you want to do a building campaign, you can just do it raiding if you're all hack and slash.
And a nice combination just with the law is that there were a lot of duels sometimes if you couldn't do the compensation or do the various forms of punishment to prove that you're, I guess it isn't a punishment, or like proving that you're honest or innocent, is you could have a duel. And the duels could be like a physical duel, like combat, or it could also be like a riddle game or even...
game of chess.
Yeah, it's like a game of chess. It's very... Except all the pieces move like rooks.
Chess. That'd be horrible.
Well, it might be better.
Have you played when they're all rooks?
Yeah, there you go,
Imagine if they're all queens.
Yeah.
So that's one thing that you do. You can combine a very talky session with a very physical session if you have the combat to settle the duel.
I thought it was pretty cool. The loser of the duel was the person whose blood touched the ground first. I figured that just flashed a really cool scene where, like, somebody gets punched in the nose, it's about to drop, but he catches it so he can keep going. I thought that was kind of cool.
Yeah, it would be pretty cool. Yeah.
Slow motion.
It hits the hand.
He doesn't have armor. He's got, like, tissue paper. Just to soak it up. And
I was going
to
say wrapped in, like, padded armor.
Yeah.
Just everything. The invention of gauze.
Invention of something else, too. Yeah. All right, well, that brings us to the end of Warriors Vikings, and that's second in our Warriors
series.
First one is Hoplites, and I think we've dropped enough hints on what the third in the series will be.
I think it's something stronger than a hint.
Yeah, and that'll be Legionaries.
Cool. It was a lot of fun doing this episode.
I enjoyed it, too. So, yeah, thank you for joining us on Idle Red Hands. Check us out online, IDLERDHANDS.com, IdleRedHands.com. Listen to us right there on the website through iTunes, through Stitcher, or download the episodes through DriveThruRPG. Set up a comment on our website through Facebook, follow us on Twitter, or join the forums. We'd love to hear from you in any way possible. Thanks.
See you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
DriveThruRPG. We average 9 new titles a day. That's over 60 a week. And we've got well over 15,000 RPG titles online right now. DriveThruRPG, the one true source for RPGs.
See us online at www.idleredhands.com. Music provided by Tripod Jimmy, and the song was Roadkill. Hope you enjoyed it. See you next time.